This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 73 of the DTV Digest. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
Now, I just want to sort of apologise for the long delay in getting an episode out. That's mainly down to me moving house from Bristol up to Nottingham and all the logistics that go with that. But things are starting to settle down. I'm getting into more of a routine and being able to sort of shoehorn a bit of podcasting back into my schedule. And this week is our bumper Halloween episode. We wanted to sort of concentrate on slasher movies for this one, to sort of kind of tie in with Halloween, the latest film in the cinemas. Didn't quite pan out like that, as you'll find out. But our films this week will be Don't Blink, Ruin Me, Camp Death 3, Party Night, and Summer of 84. As usual, we bring you all the news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went to DVD, Blu-ray and streaming media. But before we get into all that, let's kick off with the DTV chart.
UK DTV chart time. Let's get straight on with it. We got 9 this week. Number 9, Escape Plan 2.
I still haven't caught up with this one yet.
Have you not?
It just doesn't really appeal to me. You know, despite Stallone, despite Batista, I've just had so much bad, you know, word of mouth about it. Maybe when the third film comes out, or maybe I'll watch them back to back, you know, as they were filmed. But at the moment, I'm not that bothered.
Yeah, I'm getting a bit worried about this phase of Stallone's career, because you see, I mean, although he's got Creed 2 and stuff like that, he's also doing stuff like this, which is basically a DTV movie in which he briefly appears. It isn't really the main star. He's got another one. He's got another one coming out, which we were going to look at and coming soon, but the trailer got pulled because it clearly been leaked, basically. His next film called Backtrace, which is like proper low budget, you know, Bruce Willis kind of territory, which looks a bit worrying, but still, Stallone's looking pretty good in that as well. And what is he, like 70 now?
Yeah, so
he's doing pretty well. So it's interesting that he's sort of straddling that line of doing big stuff like Creed 2 and the upcoming Rambo movie and DTV movies.
And Expendables 4 at some point as well. So,
if that comes to light, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
Number 8, we've got the latest in the DC animated films, you know, series, Constantine, City of Demons.
Yeah, haven't checked this one out yet, but I'm looking forward to it. As we've mentioned many times before, you know, the DC animated universe kicks the real life big budget ones sort of 10 times out of one.
This is like of all these releases, it's done really well. It came in last week at number 16 in the top 100. So it's not surprising to sort of see it drop down, but still very solid numbers. It was at number 71 this week.
I expect it'll be back up during the half term week.
And moving on to 7, new entry, The Toy Box.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing this, and hopefully in maybe not the next episode but the one after, we'll be covering this. I just like the look of it. I think, you know, it's some sort of like haunted RV kind of situation with Denise Richards and somebody else in it. I can't remember. There's another name in it, I think.
Is it Misha Barton?
That's it. That's probably it. But yeah, I kind of like the look of this. It's got a sort of a bit of a Hills Have Eyes kind of feel to it as well. You know, out in the desert, RV, ghosts, whatever. Yeah, I'm definitely going to check it out.
I've got a comment from our good friend Dave Wayne, who's contributed some words for us this week on some of the releases. On this one, which he has seen, he has said, Toy Box. I liked a lot about The Toy Box, but it just didn't quite manage to pull its unique storyline off. which is still piquing my interest because I don't really know anything about it. We did watch the trailer, I think, a while back, but I still didn't quite get what it was going for.
That's right. The trailer was pretty obtuse, really. It didn't really sort of spell out a lot.
Okay, staying with horror, number 6, Day of the Dead Bloodline.
Is this a new film, or is this one that's been out in the States for about a year or so and has only just got here?
Quite possibly. It's been on Netflix for a while here as well. I mean, only a few weeks, but...
Yeah, I know which one it is. Yeah. I started watching it on Netflix. I haven't finished it.
Yeah, this is the... what is it? It's not a sequel. It's not like Day of the Dead 2 that came out, quite a long time ago. It's sort of a reboot, kind of remake. I get confused with the whole remaking Romero sequels kind of thing. So it's like you don't know quite where you stand.
Yeah, it's sort of set within a sort of military compound, and they've sort of, reduced the age of the protagonists by quite a bit to sort of, late teens, early 20s.
Did you ever see the last version, the Ving Rhames?
No, I stayed away from it.
Steve Miner directed. I actually got quite. It was a good cast. I had fun with it, but yeah, I see why people didn't go for it. But this one doesn't have the big names attached, but it seems to have some. I don't know. It looks like it might be worth a look, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Now you mentioned Steve Miner, but I'm sure I saw him. He's directed something else recently. Director of Warlock, of course.
Yeah, and he did Halloween H20 or H2O.
That might be the one I'm thinking of. Because I was looking at things earlier.
Dave says, this would be an okay zombie movie had it not tried to write the coattails of Romero's films. It's probably a case of they've used the name and a sort of a bit of the concept, but it's essentially its own movie, but it's, it's trying to sort of ride on what Romero did before, rather than being... It doesn't have the courage of its convictions, basically. Sure.
I'll tell you a film which does have the courage of its convictions and doesn't try to ride the coattails too much of any other sort of zombie movie, and that's Redcon 1.
Ah, I really want to see that.
It's very interesting. It gets to a certain point where you're thinking, there's still 40 minutes of time left. Where the hell is this story going now? It seems to have like burnt through so much plot, and yet it still keeps on going. It's a very interesting film.
But it does look incredibly derivative. It's like, we've seen all those, everything that's in it, we've seen before quite a few times, the whole 28 weeks later or whatever, and, girl with all the gifts.
It does definitely sort of carve its own path, even though what we've seen so far, what you've seen so far. It does tick a few boxes, but at the same time, it does the same thing.
It's interesting to see that it's a film that's on tour. It's like they haven't really got enough, they haven't got many prints, and they're just taking it around one cinema at a time, and they're making it like a we're coming to your town kind of thing, which is quite unusual.
It is, but I think Kevin Smith did that with one of his films as well.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, carry on, mate.
Yeah, no worries. So we sort of went off the reservation there. Number 5, it's a former number 1. It's John Travolta as Gotti.
Yeah. Now this film has been, I think, rather sort of cruelly sort of beaten up a bit. Even before it was released, the press were all over it, sort of saying, oh my god, it's the worst film ever, it's going to be the biggest flop. Before anyone had a chance to even sort of watch it properly. The trailer, I thought, wasn't too bad, but I must admit, I watched the Honest Trailers video for this.
Yeah, it was very good.
Which spelled out quite a few things, script writing errors.
And how many copies of Goodfellas there are.
Yeah, that's right. How many scenes they lifted wholesale from Goodfellas, which is kind of ridiculous. Or you could say that, well, this is based on Gotti's life, and they based Goodfellas on, that. Who knows? But there's too many similarities and too many pedantry moments in there.
I'd give it a shot. I'm not a massive I've seen the trailer and I was like, I'm not particularly drawn in by it and that, but I think it's one of those films that kind of has to be seen at some point.
The thing is, though, I don't think Travolta's bad in it. I think his performance is actually pretty decent. You know, I think he's got quite an intense persona in the film.
But well, he kind of, I mean, Travolta's. I quite like Travolta, and he's another one of those guys who sort of his career sort of here and there, and he sort of turns up all over the place, and he gets these big roles, and you know when he's playing real life characters like this guy, and in the People, was it People versus O.J. Simpson?
Yeah,
that he was in as well. I think he was getting quite good notices for that. I've always quite liked. Some people really don't like John Travolta at all, I'm not really, like, for example, my uncle just won't watch anything with Travolta in, not even like Broken Arrow or stuff, which I think is a mistake. But yeah. I think he can be excellent, and he can be a really good villain as well. So if he's having fun in the role and you know sort of doing it right, I think this could be a good time.
Absolutely.
Right. So number four, the first of our sort of VOD simultaneous cinema release entries. This is The Hurricane Heist from Rob Cohen.
Yeah, I wish this was better, basically. It's got two of my favourite actors in it, Ryan Kwanten and Toby Kebbell, playing estranged brothers who get caught up in a plan to steal all of these used banknotes before they're sort of burnt in the sort of treasury vault in this sort of town that's being hit with a hurricane.
Is it a crossfire hurricane?
What now?
Is it a crossfire hurricane?
In what way?
Oh, I don't know. It's a Rolling Stones reference.
Oh, okay. God. Okay, I'm old, but even so. I just wish this was better. You know, there's various set pieces and things in it, but They just don't make any sense whatsoever. It might be a good one to do for a drunken commentary one day.
Dave says it's quite possibly the worst film he's seen in a long time. And that's saying something, because you know how much Dave watches.
Dave watches everything released by Asylum.
Yeah.
So there.
And this is like he says it's like a real, I think he mentioned before, or somebody said that it's like, it's a really big budget Asylum movie. It's like they had so much money, and it's like, where did it go?
Yeah. It still looks cheap.
Yeah. But I'm still prepared to give it a shot.
You should give it a shot.
I think it would be good fun.
One of those ones. It would be a good one to do like a live commentary. You know, just between us, really, just to sort of like just comment on it while watching it. It's so bad.
I think we have to pencil that in at some point. Mm. Right, moving on to another film with quite well-known stars in it. In fact, very well-known stars. It's Hangman, number three.
I kind of like this. It is sort of a bargain basement, sort of cop thriller, you know, procedural. It's Carl Urban and Al Pacino, of all people, working together. It also has the actress from Person of Interest, the TV series, whose name escapes me right now, it is a pretty decent sort of, you know, straight to video sort of, you know, procedural, basically.
So Brittany Snow, is that you're referring to?
No, it's not. It's Sarah somebody or other. She plays the police captain, basically.
It says a detective thriller in the vein of Seven. And when it says that and it shows Al Pacino, it makes me think of the film, what was it? I can't remember. It was like a serial killer film that he did.
De Niro. Do you remember that one? That really bad one.
Oh, that was Righteous Kill. Yeah, I'm thinking 88 Minutes is the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, right, yeah.
Do you remember the sort of real time, he's a professor?
Yeah. Never saw it, actually. I did see Righteous Kill, though. And this is better than Righteous Kill. The thing about Righteous Kill is it had Donnie Wahlberg and somebody else playing like the second string detectives. I think it was John Leguizamo. But they were like the second string, you know, the backup guys, and they were so much more interesting and better, you know, to watch than Pacino and De Niro in that film. But anyway, this isn't bad at all. I enjoyed it.
Now, this is based on the game Hangman, right? So this is a
kind of, you know, that's what the killer's playing. Yeah, he's leaving clues and things as to what's going on.
Which is a very Seven knockoff kind of thing to do,
I guess.
But yeah. About, you know, 20 years later.
Serial killer with a gimmick, basically, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing I was thinking of, didn't somebody do a Hangman-themed movie before?
That was actually, yeah, there was a horror movie called
Hangman. Wasn't there like a Lou Diamond Phillips one or something?
Oh, I can't remember. The only one I can think of with Lou Diamond Phillips is The First Power. But anyway.
Yeah, Lou Diamond Phillips and Machen Amig. I just want to have a look at the synopsis, see if it is actually about the same kind of thing. So this was from a 2001 TV movie. A series of murders is taking place linked to a net-based game of Hangman, the words of which are linked somehow.
Hmm.
Detective Ruse, Lou Diamond Phillips, is on the case. So it does sound like it's a sort of a similar, basically the same concept, which is quite curious. Whether they're related in any way, I don't know, or purely coincidence, but it seems funny that somebody has used that idea twice.
I can imagine somebody in the, you know, in a writing room going, oh my God, nobody's done this before, you know. Okay, so the actress I was thinking of was Sarah Shahi. She was in Person of Interest, very good in that as well. But anyway.
Let's move on to number two. And like The Hurricane Heist, this is a Sky Cinemas original. It's a kids movie, basically, called Monster Family.
Yeah, they used the characters for this to sort of sell their, to do a bit of shilling of their sort of Sky network, didn't they? In the same way that they used The Incredibles 2 and things like this, you know, little bits and pieces. So it has a sort of bit of prestige in that way, I guess. But it looks like a poor man's
Hotel Transylvania. Yeah.
Exactly.
But it looks British, or it's at least got British, very heavy British cast.
Yeah, I think it might be originally be Spanish, and it's had a British cast.
Dubbed
into it.
That's interesting.
I don't know. I'm purely guessing just by what I've seen on the internet and where it's been available first, as it were.
Right. So moving Monster Family aside, the number one film of the week is one we talked about. Depending on when you're listening to it, I think it might be last episode or a couple of episodes ago. It's Hurricane.
Yeah, we covered this on our sort of Fighting Spirit episode, didn't we? In the hotel bar.
Yes, so this would be the last episode, episode 72. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a retelling of the Polish expatriates who managed to get to England, formed a fighter squadron, very reluctantly on behalf of the British, and ended up sort of kicking loads of ass during the Battle of Britain. It's not bad overall. It leaves a bit of a sour taste in the mouth at the end, because it does sort of stick to the facts, as it were. And it is probably about sort of 20 minutes too long overall.
Yeah, my problem with it was I thought that some of the CGI on the aerial sequences was a bit weak. I know that wasn't so much of a problem for you, but yeah, I'm pleased as punch to see this this came in at number 5. It's not 100, and this is kind of an example, because this was another VOD release. This was Rakuten Cinema's sort of big first acquisition, working with Kaleidoscope, who are now putting it out on DVD. And they put it out. They did a massive campaign putting it in like a handful of cinemas. You know, sort of a few sort of one-shot screenings. Really raised its profile. This comes into the supermarkets and stuff. World War II sells like gangbusters anyway.
Absolutely.
And I think you've got a recipe for success there. So, interesting side note, the Polish version of this story, which was made concurrently, which is called, I think it's coming out as Squadron 303. That's actually just got a UK cinema release. So that's coming out in a week or two's time. So I'm really looking forward to checking that out, and hopefully that'll get a DVD release, although it's being released in cinemas playing to the Polish market, so I'm not sure if it will actually get a mainstream release, but still it's good to see that it will be coming out, and Hurricane is at least telling that story for the Brits, basically.
So. Absolutely, yeah. And stars Roose Bolton, of course, as well. So.
Yeah, the guy from Game of Thrones, is it?
Indeed, yeah.
So there we go. A lot of new entries this week, and that's the DTV chart done.
Yay! It's time for the coming soon section, and this week we've got four trailers to take a look at. We're going to kick off with a film called Mara. This sees a young woman who seems to be sort of suffering from some sort of sleep disorder, or is she? Basically, it's the whole sleep paralysis thing where you kind of wake up and see a presence in the room and you can't move. I think this looks quite good, although the subject matter I'm pretty sure has been done before.
Yeah, it is, you know, we've seen it, you know, how many times, you know, take Absolutely. A, you know, recognizable young heroine, whether it's Jessica Biel or Jessica Alba or whatever, and in this case Olga Kurylenko, you know, put scary stuff in front of them, and you know that, but you know, I can't tell if this, because it boasts a producer of Insidious and stuff behind it, I can't tell if this is going to be a cinema release or a DTV release. It's kind of somewhere between the two.
It could go either way, couldn't it, really? I mean, you know, if it comes out around about sort of February time, it could easily find its way into a couple of screens.
I think it looked perfectly reasonable. I thought there was some really nice looking, you know, quite stylish work going on. The cracking of the bones and stuff was particularly effective, I thought, in some of the
good sound effects,
or ghost or creature work or whatever it is. But quite more interested than I originally was going in at the start of the trailer. I'd say that, although I think the trailer gave away too much.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to Await Further Instructions.
This looks rather impressive.
This looks interesting, yeah. This is about a guy bringing his Asian girlfriend for Christmas dinner around his rather racist parents' house. It's kind of like sort of bringing, you know, someone of dark skin round to Alf Garnett's house on Love Thy Neighbor or something like that. But there's something more sort of insidious going on, and they sort of find themselves barricaded indoors with weird sort of like public information messages appearing on TV. This just looks kind of out there, really. It could go either way. It could be really horrible or it could be really interesting.
Yeah, there was a film. I mean, when it first started, I was thinking, oh, it's doing a bit of a Get Out kind of thing.
Hmm.
But then it takes a turn and it's completely different from that point on. I just thought visually it looked really good. It's a very isolated, it's a single location kind of story.
Hmm.
It's British, which you know, I really like. There's another really impressive looking British movie. The title, Awaiting Further Instructions, Await Further Instructions, rather, is quite an odd one, especially when, you know, the way the sort of the trailer starts and everything, you're thinking, hang on, I don't quite get it. And there's all these things flashing up saying, you know, a sci-fi, you know, masterclass or whatever it says, and, you know, things like that, or impressive sci-fi. And I was thinking, sci-fi, I'm not getting a sci-fi vibe yet. And then as you get towards the end of the trailer, some sort of more weird experimental technological kind of stuff is going on. So there's a lot in there, but they don't explain it, which is great. And I think, say, I've seen one or two movies, even British ones, sort of that do something similar to this. But I'd say visually, it just looks really good. And this sort of put me in mind of something like The Risen, which I was rather taken with.
Yeah, so this, you know, it's got David Bradley, who is the caretaker guy from the Harry Potter movies, playing the sort of granddad. I'm really surprised. I thought I heard Danny Dyer in this. I thought I heard his voice, but I think it might have been one of the other characters, you know, because yeah, it's not in the cast. But yeah, there's one of the guys sounds exactly like Danny Dyer, which I thought was really weird. But anyway, yeah, I like the look of this. This is could be an interesting one.
I think it wouldn't be surprising to see the title change at some point. I think.
I hope they hang on to it. I hope they're able to hang on to it. Because I think it's just sort of different enough. But anyway.
Because there was that film. There was that film recently, like another British film that came out. It took a couple of years, and they changed the title. It was about a guy in a bunker. I remember just looking at that. I think in the washing up a couple of weeks ago, and they, I can't remember what the title was. 24 hours, I think it was called, or 24 hours a day, or something like that. And they just they changed the title to sort of make it more horror sounding. So yeah, it'd be interesting. Yeah.
I'm going to skip over the next one a moment. Talk about Between Worlds, because it's been like 5 minutes, Rich, and we haven't had a Nicolas Cage film to talk about. So I think we need to sort of get in there. So I've literally lost count of the amount of films he's had out this year. But
not as many as last year so far. But he's doing all right.
Considering we managed to do a whole episode of Nicolas Cage films without breaking into a sweat, looking for them, because they're just everywhere. This one,
you don't have to look very far.
We don't have to look very far, but so in this one, he plays the dad of a woman who has an accident on her motorbike, ends up in a coma, and when she finally awakes, it might not be her who's actually woken up in the body. It might be another spirit. It looks very cheap, I have to say. It kind of looks. It reminds me of like Stairway to Heaven. Highway to Heaven, the TV
series. Highway to Heaven.
That
would be good. Nicolas Cage would work in Highway to Heaven, actually.
He would, actually. But, so this isn't exactly on my list of Nicolas Cage films to watch. I want to see the one where he's the he's on a cargo ship with all the animals. Have you heard of that one?
Oh, yeah, that does sound familiar, but I can't remember what it is. Have they actually made that one yet?
Yeah, apparently, yeah. It's coming out next year.
Go on.
I was going to say, it sounds a bit like Snakes on a Plane, where this guy sort of like let loose all these animals to try and kill some guy on a boat.
But, right, and this one, the aesthetic of it just really reminds me of the Humanity Bureau.
Yes, it is that level, yeah.
It seems Cage is going to be in it a reasonable amount. I sort of get that vibe, but who knows? It's hard to tell. A couple of main characters, other characters come in, but this is the kind of movie that he likes. He loves supernatural stuff and everything, so it'll be interesting to see what sort of performance he gives in it. But really, it's I think it's going to sort of fly past most people. I don't see this making much of an impression, to be honest.
No. So, coming on to our last film, that is Paradox, also known as SPL3. Totally not related to the other SPL films. Directed by Wilson Yip and starring Lewis Koo. Also has Tony Jaa in a sort of very extended... I can't really say cameo. He's definitely a co-star in the film. It's very good, very, very action-packed, and like the other two films, it has a very sort of melancholic / sort of mean-spirited streak to it.
So do we know when this is actually coming out? Because it feels like it's been hanging around for ages.
It's been hanging around for ages. I believe it's coming out on something like the 24th of December. Taken a long time to come out in the UK, which is a shame.
I still haven't seen Killzone yet, but I did like the first one.
That was the first one.
Killzone was the second one, wasn't it? Oh, sorry. What was this?
I thought the second one
was called Killzone.
No, the first one was called Killzone in the UK.
Uh huh. Sorry, I'm thinking it was Killzone 2 that released it as. I think.
Yeah, that'll be right. Yeah.
Tony Jaa was the lead, apparently.
Yes, he was.
So the first one I've seen, I saw that when it came out way back when. Was it? What's his name? Was it the guy from Wolf Warrior?
Yes.
Yeah. So I remember enjoying that quite a lot. And the second one I would like to see, I know I've come across it, it was on that Sky Cinema and stuff, so it is available. This one, I hope it sort of turns. I am interested to see it. I'll tell you what was sort of letting me down, it's the visual effects on the fight scenes.
Right.
In the trailer, I was just like, oh, we're in sort of Romeo Must Die kind of territory again. And so it's... that really...
No, I didn't get that vibe from the film at all. I mean, I have seen this, but I really liked what I saw in it.
Okay, fair enough. Now some of just looked sort of overly CG, sort of
right.
unrealistic movements and stuff that sort of get me a bit jittery.
Anyway, that is the coming soon section for this week. Our first review this week is Camp Death 3 in 2D. This is, you may have guessed, a spoof movie of the whole sort of sleepaway camp and Friday the 13th and all the rest of it. This is directed by a guy called Matt Frame, and it sees the reopening of a summer camp after it's been closed for many years, and focuses on a guy called Todd, who has managed to convince his uncle Mel to sort of pump up the money and let him to reopen the summer camp for people with sort of mental disorders. And it's not long, in fact, you know, very much the same day when things start going horribly wrong and sort of campers and sort of workers there start getting bumped off in rather horrid ways. Rich, how did this fare as a spoof for you?
It didn't fare particularly well. In fact, it didn't fare well at all. I've got quite a thing about, you know, slasher movie spoofs, because they've just made so many of them ever since slashers started to be made. There's almost been one for one. Or you know, something is a ridiculous amount of them, going back to stuff like National Lampoon's Class Reunion and Wacko, and more recent stuff like obviously Scary Movie and Shriek, if you know what I did last Friday the 13th, or whatever it was called. One of the worst I saw was called Stupid Teenagers Must Die, which I think was a spoof, but I can't remember if it was sort of playing it straight. But I remember it being one of the worst films I've ever seen. This is probably comparable. In terms of it is another terrible terrible slasher spoof. I mean, say they've been good slasher spoofs, and you know, stuff, and Scream is in a way a spoof as well, but yeah, not good at all. But you know, I have to give them some due. This is one of the most hugely enthusiastic films I've seen I think ever. You know, the cast and crew and that are giving it their all. You know, they're really trying. Comedy is really hard. It's, you know, comedy is one of the most subjective things there is. And if you don't get the humor of the film, like from the opening scenes, you're in for a bad time, basically. And I didn't like the jokes at the start, and and I didn't like the over-exaggerated tone and that. But I say I have to sort of salute the enthusiasm of everyone involved, really.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, there was a joke at the beginning which I thought was very off-colour, but it made me laugh sort of pretty hard. And that was when Uncle Mel is sort of like ruining the day. He tried to retcon the camp for like a Jewish holiday. It was just like, it's so bad, but really, really funny at the same time.
I didn't get that joke at all.
Oh yeah. I lost so much money with it, sort of the Jew idea or something. But it's not so much, you know, the fact they did it. It's just the fact that somebody would actually think that would be an okay thing to do. But yeah, the tone of it, I just wish they had toned it down a bit. You know, it was a little bit too silly for its own good. You know, there were some scenes I really liked. I like the various characters and their sort of various sort of tics and things like that.
But I don't like the emphasis on, you know, disability and stuff as the basis for the comic. That seems like such an old
There's a really horrible bit with something right at the beginning, wasn't there, where one of the characters can't walk or something and having to sort of climb some stairs because they haven't got any sort of access ramps or something stupid like that. But overall, you know, this isn't the worst film we've seen this week by a long shot.
No. I mean,
so it's technically, you know, reasonably sound. And you know, Matt Frame, the director, he's been very sort of self-deprecating with this. You know, he's done it as a loving lampoon of the genre. But you know, he's taken the view that we kind of threw this together just for a laugh, and was sort of seeing where we go with it. He's probably, I don't know, he's sort of been overly sort of self-deprecating. I think I've certainly seen worse spoofs. That's for sure. I put this a little bit below something like Saturday the 14th.
I don't even like stuff like Scary Movie. You know, it's just, no. I didn't like Scary Movie at all. But the there have been some spoof, you know, because I love spoofs. I mean, one of my favorite genres. But I just think the slasher genre is just one that they've rarely. It's been very hard to get right, and I don't know why that is. But this one, at least, is just going full bore. I mean, Class Reunion is one of the ones I always think of because I think that's probably one of the first I saw when I was quite young. Mm. But I don't think it was actually any good. But there were a couple. There were some. You know, I did chuckle at a few things. I thought the Camp Crystal Meth. Yeah, I thought was quite a good pun. There was this musical sequence where the guys singing about how he wants to kill people. I think I can't remember exactly what it was, but he's like dressed up in spangly clothes and whatever. It's a bit camp. That kind of made me chuckle a bit. Now, did you think the squirrel was a reference to anything in particular?
Caddyshack?
Yes, that's exactly what I thought. See, I'm sure this must be intentional. It must be a Caddyshack reference because the squirrel in this movie is exactly like the gopher, basically.
Yeah.
Which would have been from around the same time as well as those movies. So that was kind of a random sort of fun little thing they threw in. But I didn't like it at all, really. I wasn't enjoying the experience of watching it. Sad to say.
Yeah. So the killer was also called Johan Van Damme, just as a sort of another sort of little thing sort of in there.
I didn't understand why at all. That didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, well. So out of 10?
Two.
A two? I think this is, for me, about a 4 to a 5, I think. I'm not sad I watched it, but I'm not going to watch it again. And I can kind of, you know, if anyone wants to sort of see a spoof, there are definitely worse ones out there. So a 5 from me and a 2 from Rich for Camp Death 3 in 2D. Our second review this week is Party Night. In this one, 6 friends become prey for a sadistic psychopath when they decide to ditch their high school's prom party for their own celebration in a secluded house in the woods that belongs to the older brother or uncle of one of the guys. So this all occurs in one evening. Now, I've already sort of alluded that I didn't think that Camp Death 3 in 2D was the worst film we've seen this week, because I'm holding that honour for Party Night, because I hated every single second of this film.
And it's only short.
It's, oh God. I knew I was going to hate this right from the beginning when we had the credit sequence where we find a young black girl tied up and being menaced by our unseen killer. And it just went on. Nothing happened, you know, for ages, and that nothing happening kept getting interrupted with yet another title card. And then another title card, and then another title card. I think it went on for like 5 minutes before this poor girl was finally sort of like stabbed and put out of her misery. And the camera work was absolutely atrocious. I just hated every second of this film.
So here we've gone from the spoof of the slasher movie to the homage, so which is the other thing where we get loads and loads of these kind of movies that are, you know, throwing back, you know, a straight-faced, loving recreation of the films that were made back in the 80s and stuff. And this was, I think, like, I'm not sure if this was like a Kickstarter or something, but it was another kind of passion project, a bit like Camp Death, but they wanted to play it straight and do all the, you know, practical gore effects and stuff. But the problem with this is that it's really got nothing notable about it. It's so bland.
There's no meat on here at all. There's no story.
It doesn't do anything of it. I mean, it's intentionally doing the whole bunch of teenagers, in a house getting killed. We crossed paths with this sort of material before. When you remember Christmas Sleigh that we did last Christmas?
Yes.
Yeah, on our Christmas horror special. So we're in a similar budget range with this. But I quite like that movie. But this one, which is, this is an American one. The previous one we were talking about, it was from Canada, for what it's worth. But this is, it was cheap and, you know, not interesting at all. You know, just a real slog to get through. And it was only an hour and 10 minutes long.
And then it sort of rushed the ending, didn't it? I mean, the ending sort of like came out of nowhere, basically. It was just like, happened and ironically it happened with the worst special effect of the whole film. It was just absolutely ridiculous. I was watching it and I'm thinking, oh, is this going to be a really sort of nihilistic horror film where everyone gets killed? Yeah, because it was literally heading in that direction, and then a split second later something happens. It's like, oh, okay. But it's just so full of like just dumb moments and just like people, we're watching people watch TV for like 5 minutes at a time while nothing's happening until somebody goes, oh hey, where did Sarah go? I don't know, I'll go look for her. You know, that's basically the plot of the film.
Yeah, and they have the they do the whole wink to the camera, oh, slasher movies, oh, they're cheesy, aren't they, kind of, oh, I want to watch
they do all that, movies. Yeah.
A copy of Halloween and stuff, and then they...
There was two, I think, two things I actually liked. One was the guy fishing at the beginning of the film, who finds the phone and the sunglasses, and has the presence of mind to actually ring the police and go, I found something that's out of place, you know, which I thought was pretty good. And the other scene is the bit, as you mentioned, one of the kids is watching a horror movie on videotape, and he goes to look for them, and he comes back and realizes that somebody's rewound the tape by 5 minutes, you know, so, which I thought was a nice little touch as well, you know, just that sort of little creepy bit, giving him a sort of sense of deja vu. It's like, no, the film should be a bit further on than this. but other than that, and okay, kudos for the, you know, some of the practical effects didn't look too bad. Okay, blood shouldn't be that watery though, guys. You know, it looks like you had a bottle of Red Alert Mountain Dew on hand rather than the corn syrup. Yeah, but you know, I suppose that just takes more practice and experience. Come up with a story next time though, instead of just a premise.
And they didn't really. They didn't really hammer home who the killer was or why he was doing it.
Which sometimes works in a film's favour. I mean, I'm going to be mentioning this film. There's another film called Final Final exam. Final exam. Yeah, because you probably watch the same bloody clip shows that I do. Which is another film which didn't explain its killer or anything. It's just something bad that happens. You know, in this one, they just happen to sort of wander into this guy's killing zone, as it were.
Did you watch the Good Bad Flicks?
Yes.
Video all about it. Yeah. So it was really good. Really interesting story, wasn't it, about that?
Well, funny enough, because I'm gonna be mentioning that when I get on to Ruin Me later on. But yeah, so you know, the fact they didn't explain who he is isn't so much of a problem. It's just they gave its protagonist no story whatsoever. You know, there's no narrative arc for anyone in this film.
No. It was just crap. And the character's not likable. It's not done. The thing that it's a sad case when you can say the best thing about a film is its poster. I mean, this poster
is very nice. Yes.
Really eye catching. Gets your attention. It got my attention. You know, I found this on Amazon Prime, and I thought, you know, has to be seen. Wish I hadn't seen it. Yeah. almost wish I hadn't seen it. Really, it was too much of a slog. Really.
How are you going to score this? Bearing in mind you've already given Camp Death 3 a 2.
I don't know. I think I've got to go for a 1.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I've mentioned at least 2 positives, so I'll give it 2 points for positive for those. But yeah, I'm going to have to give this I'm going to give it a 3 out of 10.
I say I've actually lost my notes about this, so I can't remember what my original score that I wrote down was. Given the, you know, the enthusiasm and everything that Camp Death had, yeah, you know, I didn't like it, but at least it was interesting or novel in some way. You know, this had nothing about it at all. No. So I'm going to go for 1. Now, Mike, before we move on, I meant to mention this earlier in the show when we were talking about Camp Death 3, but have you seen the Halloween 60 spoof trailer?
Yes, I have. And having actually seen the Halloween film itself at the cinemas, I thought it was a very clever sort of pastiche. And the thing is, what's very annoying for me is the fact that, basically, because of the success of this new version of Halloween, they're already now talking about sequels, which is, if anyone's seen the film, will know why that is such a stupid fucking idea, basically. It's kind of going against its own ending.
Well, I haven't seen it, but considering where Halloween H20 ended up and what happened with Halloween Resurrection, I can perfectly believe what might happen.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the thing about this particular version is they dump everything apart from the original film. So this is a direct sequel to the very first, you know, sort of John Carpenter's Halloween, and even sort of like makes a point of rubbishing the fact that sort of Jamie Lee Curtis's character, Laurie Strode, was meant to be his sort of stepbrother or sort of stepsister, I should say. You know, they totally trash that idea in the film itself. And it is, you know, it's a perfect little film, and it doesn't need any more sequels. It's just put the final nail in the coffin and let it be.
So let's go to Halloween 60, then, which is a shot-for-shot spoof remake of the Halloween 2018 trailer.
Yeah.
And it's all the concept is, so it was 40 years later in this case, and now it's another 20 years later, and the same thing's happening again. So everything that Camp Death 3D got wrong, I thought this was getting right. They're not overextending the concept. You know, the joke, they're getting the jokes right. The quality is really good. It's just a very, very well made little, you know, almost, well, you can classify this as a short film, basically.
Yeah, basically, it's literally a short film. It's just very, very clever, very well done. And as you say, you know, it's a shot for shot remake. Well, not even remake, shot for shot pastiche of the actual trailer. Yeah, no, even down to the sheriff guy, you know, he's a spitting image of the sort of character in the film. Absolutely brilliant.
Very well edited. So anyone who hasn't checked that out yet,
we'll please, put it in the footnotes.
Yeah, we'll put a link in. Do check it out. It's from Fuzz on the Lens. Very well worth seeing. It's only 3 minutes.
Absolutely. Our next review is Don't Blink, which has also been released as Foxtrap in the past. In this one, after a terrible accident leaves a young girl disabled, 5 years later, the group responsible are invited to a remote manor house in the countryside for a class reunion. Little do they know that they are being targeted by a masked maniac, hell-bent on revenge. Okay, so this is a British film.
It is.
And unfortunately, I didn't get to see this because when I was trying to sort of find an online review copy, the only film that came up was a completely different film called Don't Blink, about people going to some place in New Mexico and disappearing one by one out of thin air, which actually looks pretty interesting for like some sort of TV movie, but I digress. Rich, so this is on you. How does Don't Blink / Foxtrap hold up?
Very well, actually. We were talking a moment ago about Party Night and how that was an intentional sort of throwback slasher and everything. And it was done really badly. This is an example of it done really rather well. It's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. The budget, you know, the low budget is, you know, on display. The inexperience is on display. But I mean, you know, it's interesting. This is the first film that Proportion Productions actually made. They've done a whole bunch of stuff since. They're one of the most prolific, production and distribution, or I don't know if they're distribution as well, but producers of horror films at the moment are probably next to Andrew Jones and the like. You know, the very same week that, or the next week after this came out, another one of their films came out. So there's just so many of them. We talked about one of their the 12 Deaths of Christmas a while back, on our Christmas episode that I referred to earlier.
Yeah,
which again we did quite like that. They're putting out some really rather decent films. This was their first. For some reason, it's only just coming out. It was made in made in 2016. It was originally supposed to come out 2017, and I think it did come out in America. I think it might have been even just earlier this year under the original title of Foxtrap. That I can understand the title change because I don't quite understand the Foxtrap title really, and I don't really understand the Don't Blink title to be honest. So it's not really relevant in either case. But made in Somerset, I believe. Follows the usual kind of setups and touchstones as other movies. So as you mentioned in the outset, there's a prank that goes wrong and somebody gets her, and there's kind of a payback kind of thing going on. It's a reunion in a house and a bunch of people, but it's engaging, it's atmospheric, the editing, music, and the shocks are all done very well. There's some really nice sort of really surprising moments, which I don't go have that sort of reaction very often on a little film like this. The ending's really drawn out, but it's got some really nice moments, and yeah, I would strongly recommend it. Our good friend Dave, once again, has contributed some viewpoints on it. But before I get on to what Dave's got to say, can you just sort of give me an idea of how you sort of felt about it from the trailer that you saw?
I like the look of it. It actually reminded me of an earlier film called Truth or Dare. I don't know if you remember this one from 2012. Which had a similar kind of thing where a bunch of people from college are invited to a remote location for a party. And it turns out that one of their classmates, was sort of tricked into a sexual liaison and then, put on the internet and end up killing himself, and then it's his older brother sort of takes over and sort of starts a bit of revenge. So I was reminded of that when I sort of saw the trailer. I do like the look of it, though.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with that one. I'm just looking at it now. It does seem quite... there's loads of films called Truth or Dare, including one that came out earlier this year.
That's right,
yeah. So it's a bit hard to look up. But yeah, that wasn't familiar. That looks quite interesting as well. I'm going to move on now to Dave's comments. So sort of going to read a sort of a crazy or sort of a crazy, but sort of a summary of his review, or which is going to... It'll probably sound a bit awkward, but I'm going to give it a go because I don't really want to rewrite what he said very well. So he says, in brief, we'll try and summarize because he's got a lot to say. So this was written by the Proportion Productions CEO, Scott Jeffrey, who went on to pen the decent remake of the 80s slasher Unhinged, as well as 12 Deaths of Christmas, which was also released as Mother Krampus. Directing duties fell to Jamie Weston, who later shot their well-received slice of erotica, The Darker Shades of Elise. Now, you saw that one, didn't you, Mike?
Did. Yep. Yeah, me and Dave watched that. It's good.
Yeah, so Jamie Weston seems, this is me talking, like a really, you know, sort of good, smart director, as far as I'm concerned. You know, films, you know, I've reacted well to this, and you guys have liked that. I think they've got some... You know, skills going on.
Yeah, he's got form.
Yeah, exactly. He got returning to Dave's comments. He says, for their first film, it was an ambitious little number. His main weaknesses for him, as they are for a few of their films, is the excessive running time of nearly an hour and 40 minutes, which I completely agree with. Much like his favourite film of theirs, House on Elm Lake, it could really do with being trimmed to the 75-minute mark to create a far tighter production. But nevertheless, there's still plenty to coo over considering the lean budget. Top of that praise list are undoubtedly the girls, led by Proportion regular Becca Harani, who's sometimes credited as Becky Fletcher, ably assisted by Kate Lister, who also stars in Curse of the Scarecrow, which was released as Scarecrow Rising, which was the film I was referring to earlier that came out about a week after this one. Also, Julia Ehringer and Clarissa Clayton. The storyline is, of course, a little derivative, but I can live with that, and thanks to a dose of blood, botheration, and boobs, is enough to pique the interest of many a casual viewer. By the end, eventually, things do tend to descend into eye-rolling predictability, but for a small-scale chunk of homegrown horror, I'd give it a B for effort alone. And I asked Dave what his score out of 10 would be for it, before I give my own. And he said he would give it maybe a 5. Not great, not awful, but it's up. It's high up for the genre low-budget British horror. Good low-budget British horror.
Okay.
And I'm going to go a little better than that. I'm going to say 7.
Okay, then 7 out of 10 for Rich and a 5 from Dave, who's locked himself in a room somewhere trying to get his book finished, I believe. Okay, so that was Don't Blink. Okay, it's time for our next review, which is Ruin Me. Now, this is on the Shudder Network. It's one of their exclusives. Fits nicely with our sort of slasher theme, though. In this one, we have a young woman called Alexandra who is invited by her boyfriend to take part in a slasher sleepout weekend, which is a sort of extreme camping event for a bunch of people who are then sort of terrorized Friday the 13th style by actors and things like this. Alex has never seen a horror movie in her life, and is being taken along by her boyfriend after his friend Graham has had to drop out at the last minute. Things start off reasonably well. She starts getting into the spirit of the sort of the puzzles that sort of start coming up. But then the people on the tour start dying for real, and things start getting a bit weird. And it comes to a point where Alex can't tell what's real and what isn't anymore. This is very well done, I thought. I really enjoyed this. It's got some very interesting little twists in it. It gets to a point where it kind of throws away the whole premise for about a 10-minute sequence and then comes back to it. It's pretty well written. The characters are actually decent. There's one particular character called Pitch, who's like the real hardcore sort of slasher fan, and it's just great sort of watching him getting outplayed by Alex, you know, when she starts solving all the clues and the puzzles that they're doing. It really gets his back up. It's quite funny. It's got some really, really good moments to it. Some really good surprises, and it gets to a point where you sort of, you know, you're watching the film and keeping an eye on the running time, and you're thinking, wait, where's this film going now? You know, because it seems to have wrapped everything up, but there's still stuff to do. But yeah, this is just very well done, and it sort of it paints certain characters in deeper shades than you'd expect. That's for sure. So I mentioned earlier, I was sort of going back to Final Exam because, you know, I was watching that sort of Good Bad Flicks little segment they did. And the fact that when the film was originally put in, they put in a film that they thought was going to get a PG-13 rating. But in fact, it came back with an X. And the reason it came back with an X was because the over-excessive stabbing at the end of the film. So there's a similar situation in this film, and I was actually counting the number of stabs going on, and I got as far as 17, which I thought, that's pretty excessive. But it's just a really well put together, little bit of a spoof, little bit of a sort of knowing wink to the genre, but does it very well, I thought. And that is why I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10.
I didn't even know about this one, Mike, until you mentioned it. I think I did come across it on Shudder. It's Shudder, isn't it?
It is Shudder, yeah. You know, this is a good moment to sort of speak about Shudder, because you rented you took a month long subscription to Shudder through Amazon Prime.
Yeah, one of the Amazon Channel. Yeah,
they have these various channels. But in doing so, you found that you weren't getting the full Shudder catalogue.
No, there's a very limited number of the actual releases that are actually coming through, which is very disappointing because one of the films that were, in fact, the next film we're going to talk about was the reason that I was on a free trial and then it went to paid and I thought I'll keep it because I want to see this movie. And I'd seen the list say what's coming up on Shudder this month that had gone on Twitter. So I just presume, yeah, they'll be coming on it. No, they don't. I think one or two did, maybe, but certainly not the film that I actually wanted. So I was like, well, that was a complete waste of money, really. What's the point of doing that? So then I had to take out another membership trial on the website version, which for me is, as this, you know, because I don't have, you can watch it on other, you can watch it on your TV on other platforms and stuff, but for me it meant I had to watch it on my computer, which I don't like. But why? It's not even explained well. So you would naturally expect the two to be the same, and then if you look in, there's some terms and conditions, whatever, you look on the Shudder website and it says what Amazon do is basically completely independent of what we do. It's really nothing to do with us, kind of thing. Mm. It's like, well, they branded it Shudder, but it's not Shudder. They've got some of the same films, but they
kind of sort of like just curated sort of films from Shudder.
Yeah, I don't know how that works, but it's not a good thing really, because what's the point of doing that? I'm not actually keen on any of these Amazon channels offerings, to be honest. They seem very limited in what you get for whatever the monthly subscription fees are, which is usually like at least £5.
Yeah.
There's an MGM channel and which got
I
some
noticed, price. Yeah, because I was looking at getting Amazon Prime for Jack Ryan, amongst other things, because they got Good Omens and The Boys coming as well.
Well, Prime itself is absolutely worth you know, getting it. There's some really good stuff coming on, you know, there very regularly, like loads of interesting stuff that doesn't appear anywhere else, new stuff and old stuff. Probably more diverse than what you'd find on Netflix.
Hmm.
But it's, the two are certainly, you know, finding out, you know, Amazon Prime and Netflix are really leading the way. They're both really good services.
Yeah.
But for the unique sort of niche stuff like Shudder, you know, this channels idea just is a dead loss as far as
I can see that. I've kept my sort of subscription to Shudder going ever since we looked into when we got the original sort of free trial, basically, and it's sort of paid dividends along the way. I've seen some really cool films on there. I think buyer beware. I think that's the thing here, isn't it? With these sort of channels from Prime, you're not getting the full service, and you might come a cropper, basically. Which sort of brings us into our next film, which is Summer of 84. In this one, we have a bunch of friends in 1984 who come to the suspicion that one of their neighbours, who just happens to be a police officer, might be responsible for a number of disappearances of young teens in their neighbourhood, in their sort of suburban area. So you originally thought this might be, you know, in keeping with our sort of slasher theme.
I did indeed.
But
couldn't be further from the truth, really.
No, this is definitely sort of a different flavour altogether. So how did you find this one, Rich?
Well, the first thing is sort of going in with expectations. Like you say, I was aware of the film because of the filmmakers. I recently watched their last film, which was Turbo Kid.
Hmm.
They're very, you know, cine literate, sort of, you know, very interested in sort of retro, you know, homages and synthesizer music and throwbacks. And this film does that. Well, gore is sort of the main thing, you know, comedy and gore, you know, sort of over the top kind of stuff going on. This film sort of throws all those expectations out of the window, you know, this, which kind of goes two ways, really. Because I kept waiting for it to turn into Turbo Kid,
yeah,
and it doesn't. There's no, there's a few practical sort of effects scenes, but there's nothing on the scale. It doesn't go wild and crazy and sort of spoofy. It's not the sort of splatter movie kind of parody that I thought it was going to be. It's comparable to It, basically, and other films like that that are about young kids, you know, getting into, you know, Goonies or whatever, and getting into, you know, shenanigans and such. The one that came, there were two that come to mind, basically. What they've done here is they've essentially remade Disturbia, which kind of is a mistake, really, because it's played too straight down the line. There's nothing particularly different from Disturbia about it, you know, or other films that have played with the same, you know, Rear Window inspired concepts. But that said, it's a great film. Really liked it a lot. I thought it was fantastically made, and I just, it's because of the weight of expectations of thinking it was going to be something else.
Sure.
Sort of threw me off. I thought the way they, the one sort of holdover from Turbo Kid is Lematos as the composer, so you get a great electronic score. The other film, Monster Squad and Stand By Me, are other films that come to mind. But the other, more recently, The Babysitter.
Yeah,
I thought this would be really good in a double bill with that.
Yeah, I can see where especially the sort of the relationship between. Is it Tommy? I think is the main character that and his
former babysitter, basically.
Yeah, Nikki.
Yeah.
It's
got all those familiar touchstones of the same sort of character. You know, he's a bit of a geek, but he's all right, and he's got these mates, and they fit all these tropes, and they're interested. You know, he's got the hot girl who he knows, but he doesn't know. You know, the sort of he's coming into maturity, and all those sort of familiar things, and. You know, strange stuff going on in the suburbs, you know.
Yeah. And it's interesting as well because, you know, sort of various characters, the various kids, you know, that they had their own issues, which they're kind of hiding from each other as well, you know. Because you got like the tough kid, is it Kyle, I think it is, the sort of one wears the leather jacket, you know, clearly from sort of a broken home, you know, doesn't like going back there very much, sort of spends all his time with his, you know, sleeping over with his friends and things like that. And I think one of the other ones, because they spend all the time in a tree house, which one of their dads wants to tear down. And then, of course, Nikki across the road is going, you know, her parents are going through a divorce. So you know, there's a lot going on in the sort of background as well, if you pay attention. The main drive of the film is the sort of, is he or isn't he a serial killer? You know, the guy across the street, he comes across as sort of the nice guy, pillar of the community and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, when you know, it eventually gets to the point where the film can't sit on the fence any longer, and it has to be one or the other, you know. And there's various things when the sort of the penny drops at the end as to what's really happening, are really chilling, you know. There's you know, I won't spoil anything, but the photographs that you see at the end and their significance is just like one of those oh my god sort of moments. Just really, really cool. And then again, you know, it's one of these films where you think everything's wrapped up and then you look at the running time and you think, wait, where's this going now? You know, it's just been a running theme tonight. And yeah, it goes in a sort of another quite surprising direction, and has, you know, a much more open-ended finish than you might expect for this sort of film.
Yeah, I think it's not considering it's on Shudder for the majority of the running time. You think, why is this on Shudder? Because there's nothing overtly horrific about it. It's got more of a Disturbed. It's more of a thriller, but it does take a few turns. But it never gets to any sort of heavy duty splatter or anything, which is fine. It doesn't even do anything, you know, like the babysitter, for example, went very OTT.
Over the top, yeah.
This doesn't do that at all, which is why they make quite an interesting double bill in my view, because they're both sort of playing with the same conventions and that, but doing it in a completely different way. The thing is, I would have expected this film to be like The Babysitter, but it wasn't. It's a very classy movie, this, it would feel like it was made by the same people who made It. You know, it's that level of high quality. Young actors are brilliant. The characterization's fantastic. The setting and, you know, the time and place of it is all really done well. Stranger Things, obviously, is the other thing to reference here, but I've never seen that, so I can't actually say how close to Stranger Things this might be. But, you know, they talk about, you know, Gremlins has come out. Oh, I haven't seen Gremlins yet and stuff like that. Mm. But it's not a huge amount of it. It's not massively... No, it's kind of it's a bit more gentle. This is probably dramatically, it's probably closer to something like Stand By Me.
Yeah, I agree. No, I really like this as well. It's a good one to sort of cap our little Halloween reviews with. So, Rich, what's your score for Summer of 84?
I definitely want to see it again. It's an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I think I'm going to join you. 8 out of 10 for Summer of 84. I've also noticed, Rich, that Mayhem is now on Shudder as well, so hopefully you can get to see that, as well as Revenge and Downrange. Those are my sort of top films on Shudder at the moment.
Well, Revenge, unfortunately, isn't on the UK version of
really?
Shudder. Yeah, Mayhem has been added, but Revenge hasn't.
Have they got... What was they taking it down? I thought it was on there.
No, I think I don't think they had it on there. But unless obviously I've only just subscribed, so I don't know if it was potentially on there before. But what was the other film you mentioned?
Downrange and Mayhem.
Oh, Downrange, yeah.
Downrange is very good. Anyway, so yes, those are our main reviews, and let's get on with some washing up. It's time for the last part of the show, so it's over to Rich for the washing up.
Right, I'm going to use, because I haven't seen any of these movies, thankfully Dave has seen quite a few of them, so he's provided us with some more comments and that, which is great. So we're going to focus on the horror stuff first, and I'm going to lead with his comments, and Mike, to sort of mention anything that you've got to say about, you know, the artwork or anything, or even trailers if you've seen them. I'm going to start with Dead Knight, and Dave says it's probably the most disappointing DTV horror of the season, considering its pedigree. Do you know what he's referring to there?
It says it's from the team that brought you John Dies at the End. So assuming this is... is it Don Cascarelli?
Dies at the End is from... Brad Baru.
No.
Brad Baru? Bradford Baru? Am I looking at the wrong one? No, I think I'm looking at the right one. A caring mother loses her sanity, setting up a chain of events resulting in a tragedy and murder.
That's not John Dies at the End.
No, okay.
No. John Dies at the End is directed by Don Coscarelli.
No. I think it's from the producer of John Dies at the End. So yeah, Dead Knight is from the producer of John Dies at the End. So this is this is that movie, this Brad Baru guy, written by...
It's called Dead Knight, was it?
Dead Knight, yeah.
Yeah.
Written by Irving Walker, first screenplay. So I think it's... What he's referring to there is... that it comes from people behind John Dies at the End. AJ Bowen, who's, I think, quite a genre, well-known actor. He's done stuff like The Signal, House of the Devil, stuff like that. And Your Next.
Yeah,
so it's got, I think that's what he's referring to there. Have you watched the trailer for it at all?
I haven't, unfortunately.
No, okay, fair enough. Move on to the next one, which is From a House on Willow Street. This is another one which has been on... VOD. It's been on Sky Cinema, actually. And Dave says, I thought it was well worth a look with a cool storyline, but the US artwork was better than what they used over here. And the that film, I don't know much about. Mike, you could tell me about it from the cover. Are there any quotes or anything that we can refer to?
There's nothing. I can see what he means about the US cover, though. If you ever look on IMDb... it's a much more sort of striking cover. So, just bear me a sec.
So this is from 2016, apparently. It's taken a while.
2016, that's right.
Directed by Alistair Orr, who has also made...
You know what? This does sound interesting. After a young woman is kidnapped, her captors soon come to realize that, in fact, they may be the ones in danger, and this young woman has a dark secret inside her. Yeah, I'd be interested in seeing that, I think.
Okay.
It was like those sort of films where, you know, sort of bad guys bite off more than they can chew and it heads down a different direction.
Interestingly, it's from South Africa.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I haven't seen many. I remember there was one from years ago called Slash that I saw. It was South African, but it was pretending to be in America. I don't know if the same is going to be true here, but the next one we're going to mention is called... House of Ghosts, which I think was the one that was originally called Ghosts of Darkness or something like that. Apparently it didn't come out. It was due out and seems to have not turned up. So we're not sure what's happening with that one. It might be that it's been delayed. We've had this a couple of times recently of films just being pulled at the last minute and stuff. So not sure about that. It's another British one. I think it's about like some guys at a bed and breakfast or something.
Yeah, actually, that's ringing bells with me now.
I think you looked at it and you said, "Oh, with that many quotes on the cover, I've got to see it."
Oh, it's that one. Yeah. So the one on IMDb isn't showing any quotes. So. Uh-huh. But yes, that is one to sort of take a look at, I think.
So some of the quotes for Ghosts of Darkness was the original title. There's like five quotes. It's a triumph, a brilliant movie, classic ghost story, an all-round triumph, totally worth a watch. I highly recommend seeking out. 5 out of 5, utterly compelling. But the whole House of Ghosts thing, compared to the original artwork, where it says a new breed of ghost hunter, looks completely different. Looks like a completely different movie. Nothing new there, really.
Absolutely.
House of Salem is the next one. I believe it's another British movie.
Featuring a kidnapping or something as well.
It says it's very bland, from a director who's hailed as an upcoming force in British horror. And that director must be, from a quick look in the IMDb, James Crowe. Let's have a look at James Crowe. Name sounds familiar. Did he do... He did Curse of the Witching Tree, which I was in, and a few others. Nothing I'm familiar with.
Oh no, so he wrote He Who Dares.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. He's written quite a few other bits. Nothing I'm familiar with. Riot, he wrote. I think that was another sort of, not Paul Tanter, but sort of related. Simon Phillips movie, yeah. So he wrote that with Simon Phillips, Riot.
No, that's not the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, Nick Nevering, one that was. I'm not, the cover didn't particularly strike me. I think it's one of these ones put out by Left Films. Didn't sort of grab me too much.
No.
So I won't be seeking that out. Now, this one's interesting because it's got Matt Smith from Doctor Who, Patient Zero, and Stanley Tucci.
And
Patient Zero. Yeah. He says, I expected it to be a lot better considering the fine cast, but it came across as very generic, which may explain why it went DTV.
Yeah. Pass on that one.
The next one is the Proportion Productions release of Scarecrow Rising, which we referred to earlier. He says, with its predominantly female-led creative team, he'd hoped for good things. But with a crappy protagonist, it was just a little bit meh. So lots of disappointments at the moment, it seems, unfortunately. But there's a saving grace here with I'm going to mention another disappointment first. The Curse of the Nun. He said that was very lame indeed. I think that might have actually been another.
Are you surprised? Really, are you surprised that The Curse of the Nun is a lame duck?
Well, considering if it is one of these proportion production ones, I kind of am. Because it's like even though they're sort of riding the coattails and stuff, they sort of seem to be doing, turning out half decent, knockoffs or riffs on well-made stuff. But yeah, they're sort of treading close to the mark on that one with the Nun. So moving away from that, two things he really liked. We already mentioned what he said about the toy box earlier, so I'm not going to mention that. He says the Blue Skeleton, which was originally the houses October built to the sequel to the film that was originally released, was released over here by a different distributor as the Houses of Halloween, I think. So this is a docudrama kind of not found footage, but you know what I'm getting at, kind of.
Yeah.
Faux documentary kind of thing. He says it's his standout horror of the season, a perfect sequel. The first film got very good reviews. If you watch the good, I think it's Good Bad Flicks, video about the houses that October built, they actually made it twice because when they first filmed it got such a good response to like investors or whatever as well that they decided to invest more money in it. I think that was the case, and they basically made a bigger film out of it. So there's another version floating around somewhere of that film, and this one is, you look at the posters of these, and they look like, big studio horror movies, but they're actually completely different kind of thing. But they're all about the horror attractions, which is like a big thing in America. It's becoming a big thing here, with a lot of event stuff happening at various locations, mainly around Halloween. And, zombie contamination events and things like that. But this is a massive thing in the States. Do you know much about this one, Mike?
I don't know. I remember hearing about the house that October built, but I haven't seen either of them.
And the last one he's got something to say about is The Dark, which I think is a Fright Fest. Present?
It's their first, it's their first bona fide DVD, that they actually put the Fright Fest Presents logo on. I'm quite interested in seeing this. I've got a screener to watch at some point. I do like the sound of the premise.
He says this is a close second as his favourite of the month's horror films. So that's pretty good. So as far as Dave's concerned, for the washing up, the houses are October Blue Skeleton and Dark are the two that are worth checking out. Now, moving on. There's been absolutely tons coming out recently. We're not going to go through everything, but we are just going to sort of hop, skip, and a jump through some of the releases. Now, Mike, is there anything particular that's caught your eye?
One or two, certainly. Obviously, I can't not mention Operation Red Sea, which is due out this week. It's the latest film by Ringo Lam. It is my action movie of the year, if not the decade.
Wow.
No, it's of the year. Let's not get too carried away with the hyperbole. But this is real big budget mayhem going on. Thematically, it's quite similar to Wolf Warrior 2, I should say. The big difference here is that the protagonist is like a team of special forces going in rather than just sort of a lone guy. And it's very much, about this sort of well-oiled team, getting stuck into this mayhem, this insurrection in a sort of African country that's going on, where sort of Chinese nationals have been held hostage. It's, If you were to call it a propaganda film, I think you'd be wrong, except in the way that it's quite funny. Right at the end of the film, there's a sort of an afterword with a hotline where it says basically, if you're a Chinese and you're stuck anywhere in the world, when the shit goes down, call this number and we'll come and get you. in all seriousness, It was a really interesting sort of moment, but I love this film. I've got it on order with Amazon, and unfortunately it's not turning up till next weekend. I've already seen it before, but I can't wait to get hold of the Blu-ray and sort of stick it in TV. Couple of others I want to mention: Kill Switch, starring Dan Stevens. We looked at the trailer almost a year ago, I think. It's taken a very long time for this to turn up. Interesting sort of point of view sort of style film. That sort of thing isn't usually my favorite, but it's sort of the amount of special effects and things they managed to pull off in this film, I think, looks quite interesting. Just sort of scrolling down. The Monster is another one. I'm surprised Dave didn't mention this, but
I think you only didn't mention it because he hasn't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
I think there's a few other horror movies that we're going to talk about in a minute, but because there's absolutely tons of them. But that cover is really striking, and it made me think of Feast first of all. But there's loads of covers that have that kind of
it's sort of a bit like Alien.
Thing. Looks good though.
Yeah, there's one more I just want to mention in passing, and that's UFO. Which has Gillian Anderson and David Strathairn in supporting roles. They're not really the main focus. Gillian Anderson's in it reasonable amount. She plays a college professor of mathematics, and one of her students, who's he's a bit of a genius. He witnesses, or he comes across, a UFO sighting at a London airport and tries to investigate. And of course, there's the usual sort of things being thrown up in his way. But he's using mathematics to try and sort of solve the appearance of this this UFO. And it's that side of it, the actual science moments where they're they're talking about the science behind the sightings. That's where the film works a lot. It works really well. It's the other bits which are just boring. And obviously there's no special effects budget here at all. It does have the real life sort of mathematics behind what they're doing is actually really interesting. But the rest of it is it's one of those films.
Now I'm going to mention, I know you're interested to see this one, Future World, James Franco, Lucy Liu, and Milla Jovovich.
I mean, that's a great cast, isn't it, for a film going straight to DVD?
And I think, is it Suki Waterhouse who's actually the lead?
Yeah.
Yeah, so James Franco is kind of, it's one of his projects that he's going to
back. That's right.
And put out.
This could be absolutely ridiculous, but it looks great from the trailer. So yeah, definitely want to catch this.
And before I move on to some other bits, I just want to mention a few war movies that are out. First one I want to point out is one called The Evacuation, which is another example of a film being marketed in a completely different way to what it was probably originally intended. It's a Belgian film, called Come What May, by Christian Carrion, who did Joyeux Noël, which is quite a well-regarded film about the ceasefire football match that took place. In the sort of arms, or whatever they call, refer to it as anyway. And it's got a score by Ennio Morricone. And what they've done is they've taken all the pictures, all the actors or whatever off the cover and just stuck big old tanks on there. Yeah. And they've changed the title to The Evacuation. The only way to survive is to run. The marketing of it's hilarious, but I am very interested to see this one.
Yes.
Moving on to a similar kind of situation, we've got The Bombing with Bruce Willis and Adrian Brody, apparently. Although I think the Chinese have a bit more of a bigger role to play in the movie.
Indeed. I really don't know what to make of that film at all. I mean, it actually has a scene where Bruce Willis, who's the sort of hardened wing commander, you know, sort of tasked with like sort of commanding these Chinese sort of pilots, and then the climax of the trailer has Bruce Willis flying one of the planes into this sort of dogfight or something. It's like it couldn't be more ridiculous.
And isn't it like he's got the cockpit open or something, and he's just like screaming or something. But anyway, it's an odd duck this one. But yeah, so there you go. That's going to definitely turn up in the chart. I have no doubts about that.
Yes.
Mel Gibson apparently worked as an artistic advisor or something in the film. So the Chinese have just had, you know, they're just throwing money at it, basically.
Yes. We've got this much money.
And another Chinese movie which has American actors in it is The Hidden Soldier, which was originally called The Chinese Widow. This one's got Emile Hirsch, a much more down-to-earth kind of story. It says Pearl Harbor changed history. Her choice changed lives. it's basically, I think, she finds a pilot who's crashed and she protects him, essentially.
Hides away, yeah.
Based on true events. So, yeah, so three sort of quite big war movies there.
You've missed one there. The Great War Horses.
Ah, now this one's an interesting one because it's a documentary about Australian horses in World War One, I believe.
Mm. Now, I recommend ditching this movie and replacing it with a film from 1987 called The Light Horseman. If you're interested in this sort of thing, forget about the documentary. Watch the actual film itself. It is brilliant. It's you know, really, really good, solid sort of war action movie with the horses front and center. Definitely worth checking out.
Funnily enough, there are some celebratory, you know, clubs or whatever that celebrate the horses and their role in the war or whatever that do double bills of those films.
Right.
So they put it on at the cinema. They show this one and The Light Horseman as well, which I don't know. Is that an Australian film?
It is, yeah. And it's dead good. It really is.
Okay. Now, there's a few animated movies. There's like a DC Universe one, which is called The Ray, which is, I don't know about that, what that's all about. There's two Atlantis ones that came out the same week. One of them is a DC Superhero Girls one called Legends of Atlantis, and the other one is a Lego DC one, Rage of Atlantis, about Aquaman. And we've got Constantine, obviously, that we mentioned earlier. One I want to mention is called Bigfoot, because Dave's seen this, and he said it's quite possibly one of the worst kids' films that has ever been made, with some truly diabolical animation. And I think that another one of the releases called Bible Town is probably the worst animated film that's possibly ever been made, because I haven't seen it, but you can tell from the trailer, you can tell from the cover that it looks awful. I mean, two of the kids have exactly the same face, and the concept just sort of seems, I've seen, I don't know, I cannot believe that this got a UK release. This is, with the original title, it's amazing.
It looks diabolical. I mean, it looks like it was made in 1985. You know, the standard of animation in this is really poor. I'm really sort of confused about the sort of the wholesome message that it's trying to put across, where when it's basically three kids jumping into a hot air balloon and flying off, you know, with no supervision or whatever. It's like, what the hell? You know,
Interestingly, this is one of three Christian movies that have come out lately. Amazingly, like that's three in a month. One of them's quite a big budget one called Samson, which has got Billy Zane and Rutger Hauer. That's where big budget sort of stands with these kind of movies. And what was the other one? Hang on, the other one was Christian Mingle, which is like quite an old sort of romantic comedy thing with Lacey Chabert in it. Yeah. But moving on, another one that Dave is recommending is called Blue Iguana. So it's one of his highlights of the DTV year to date. It's a Sam Rockwell movie. It seems to have been shot in the UK, in London.
It does look that from the cover, yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen the trailer for this. And it is one of these sort of like, sort of almost sort of Guy Ritchie kind of films where, you know, you got lots of characters, lots different subplots going on, and then sort of tying up at the end or something along those sort of lines. Okay, Dave, we'll give it a shot, see what we think. We'll get back to you.
And he mentions that there's a couple of Asylum films called Alien Siege and Android Cop. He says both are Asylum nonsense. The latter, which is Android Cop, has taken ages to come out over here. I know, because this is a Michael Jai White film, and I've kept an eye on it.
Michael Jai White's slumming it.
Yeah, exactly. Why was he in this? I don't know. He said it's certainly one of the better Asylum releases of the last few years, presumably made to coincide with the Robocop remake, it's a mockbuster attempt. And how long ago was that? Like 4 years ago? 5 years ago that they made,
This film is quite old. I remember watching, I only got about halfway through it. And I'm a big Michael Jai White fan. But there are some of his films that I just cannot watch. You know, the quality is that bad. This one, he plays a cop in a sort of dystopian future, discovers something he shouldn't, ends up going into this no man's land area, and I have no idea what happens next.
I'm expecting it's going to be like a cyborg cop kind of
thing. I'm sure, yeah.
Anyway, so we're just going to wrap up with a few, getting back to the Halloween theme, a few other horror movies that have come out. I'll mention them quickly now. So there's Down a Dark Hall with Uma Thurman.
Uma Thurman. I am interested in seeing this, I must admit. I think this looks quite interesting.
And the next one is, where is it? Hang on. Scarecrow Rising, we've already done. Castle of the Nun, we've already done. And there was another, The Gatehouse. That's it. The Gatehouse, which is a dark fairy tale. It's it says the multi-award winning film, The Gatehouse, which is a curious thing. I think it's probably it's been doing the indie circuit kind of thing, I guess.
All the markings of a Shyamalan epic. Oh dear.
Yeah, is a Shyamalan epic. You know, does anyone think there's such a thing as a Shyamalan epic?
Unfortunately, people do. You know, he seems to have turned his fortunes around with
Split.
Split and the upcoming Glass. So, yeah.
Well, Glass does look quite epic, but and whether it'll turn out, I mean, it does look like the X-Men, basically. But so I don't know anything about this, so this is quite curious to me. Another one that looks more interesting is The Hatred. Says from the producer of Halloween, doesn't say which version of Halloween, but the gas mask reminds me of one of the old slasher movies. It's like a Valentine's Day.
My Bloody Valentine.
My Bloody Valentine, that's the one, yeah. So that's what that reminds me of. We've got The Legend of Halloween Jack from Andrew... I might get it wrong. Is it Andrew Jones?
Yeah.
Welsh filmmaker?
Yeah.
So it's one of his latest. This looks... This reminds me of an old favourite of mine called Night of the Scarecrow.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is going to be as good as that. But I'm always curious to check out these movies, you know, these sort of pretending to be in America but actually shot in the Welsh Valleys kind of thing. No comments on that, Mike?
No.
No, you're steering clear of that one.
Yes.
And I think there's one called The Terrible Two, which I know is on Amazon Prime. That looks rubbish. It's, these two twins and that's them around. Good Night Mommy meets Paranormal Activity, so Creature Feature Corner.
Oh, Jesus.
Go on.
So I hate it when they do that sort of like that pitch thing on the cover, you know. It reminds me of the film The Player.
Oh, yeah.
Where people are sort of pitching ideas, you know, Tim Robbins' character. It just reminds me of that, you know. It's like this, but with this, you know. It's like, oh, for God's sake. Don't put that on the cover, for fuck's sake, you know. But anyway.
And the final film I'm going to mention is yet another British horror movie. This one, another one from Left Films, called The Snarling.
I believe I've seen the trailer for this.
Cover looks pretty cool. You know, crappy but cool.
Yes. Clever, gory, and hilarious, apparently. So
yeah, I'm a bit worried about the hilarious. I think they're trying to go for a American Werewolf in London kind of thing.
Indeed.
Or The Howling, maybe. I don't know. I never got The Howling, so I don't really kind of get that. I don't actually even really like the American Werewolf in London that much, but I see the appeal. But I prefer my werewolf movies more straight down the middle, really.
Sure. Now, I just will mention one other that we sort of mentioned earlier when we were talking about Shudder, which should be on Shudder, but isn't, but at least is coming out on DVD, and that is Revenge. If you haven't seen Revenge, I heartily recommend it. It's a great little action film. You know, it's got some mean-spirited moments. It's got some gory moments. It is very, very well shot, very well scored. There's a bit with a bit of broken glass which will have everyone sort of wincing in pain when they see it. It's just a really, really solid film.
You're making me not want to see it, saying stuff like that.
What, a bit of the glass?
Yeah.
It is nasty. But I won't say where.
I think that's the washing up done for this week, isn't it?
I think that is. On that note, we shall wrap up. Yes. So, again, sorry it's taken us so long to get an episode out. We will be sort of putting out episodes a bit more regularly from now on. In fact, we've already got the next episode in the bag. We just need to edit it and get it out. So, thank you for listening and tune in again soon.
Listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.